Trump tariffs to directly punish China may be on their way, but Beijing says it isn't backing down. According to a White House official, Trump will sign a presidential memo, quote, targeting China's economic aggression around noon on Thursday. That's raising fears the world's two largest economies may be sliding towards a trade war. Ahead of the signing, Beijing pushed back, calling Washington a repeat abuser of trade rules and saying it was America who had seriously damaged the fair nature of international trade.
It didn't follow the Fed with an increase in rates, but the Bank of England did take investors by surprise. Two policymakers unexpectedly voted for a hike, making a rise in May for only the second time in 10 years even more likely. A key reason for the descent was the world economy. It's growing at its fastest rate since the financial crisis, helping offset the uncertainty of Brexit. Britain's economy is still trailing its G7 peers after leading the pack in early 2016. But an agreement this week with the EU on a transition deal did provide a boost.
Canada Goose's luxurious coats are so popular, the company ran out of them this winter. So, in a bid to boost supply and its profit margins, it plans to make more coats in-house. That would also allow the Toronto-based company to increase its control over quality that would justify its hefty price tag, $725 to $1,700 a piece. Investors cheered the fat 60% operating margins for its online sales, and the stock has roughly doubled since it listed a year ago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's March 23rd, and it's 5:12 in the morning. We're happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day on the broadcast today. Later, we'll talk about pets on United Airlines. With our airlines reporter, Skiff's Brian Summers will be with us. United has suspended carrying pets for now as they try to grapple with a series of deaths involving pets on their aircraft. We'll talk to Brian about that in our second segment. Paul Nolte is here for our regular Friday conversation. We're going to bring him in a few seconds because we've got lots to talk about on the markets this morning. First, though, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward a triple-digit loss on the open later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are off about 200 points. NASDAQ futures are off about 75 points. That's another percent. And the S&P futures down about 17 points. Around the world this morning, markets are lower in Europe by almost 2%, in Germany by 2%, in France by a percent, in London. The FTSE down this morning by about 73 points. In Asia, markets all negative as well. The Nikkei almost off 4.5%. The Hang Seng 2.5%. The Shanghai down 3.33%. And oil this morning is trading at $64.42 a barrel, which is up about 12 cents. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management is with us this morning. Paul, looking at these numbers and looking at yesterday's drop, more turmoil on the markets.
Oh, there's going to be turmoil. We're not out of the woods yet. And the volatility that started back in early February is going to be with us, I think, much of the year. The comment being, last year was the anomaly. This is more normal. And I think a lot of investors have forgotten the fact that the markets normally do move in 0.5-1% moves on a daily basis. Obviously, we've got a lot of news that's moving the markets, but this is a more normal type of an environment where we do see the markets moving fairly dramatically in both directions.
The Dow down 724 points yesterday, almost 3%. The NASDAQ off 178, 2.5%. S&P down 2.5%. What's causing this? I know we always try to pinpoint a reason. What do you think is the reason this time?
You know, we've talked a little bit the last couple of weeks more about political risk, and that's what we're starting to see is that political risk. We've talked about a lot of different things that Trump was doing, the administration, the global issues around Brexit, around trade, and the markets seem to be just kind of gliding right through it, and the markets are starting to pay attention now to a lot of those political risks. So yesterday you had obviously, the announcement of tariffs against China. You had the chief lawyer for Trump resign as well, and the markets noticed that. The markets took another leg down when that announcement came through. And then the appointment overnight of John Bolton to replace McMaster, that also had an impact on the market. So you can see when those news headlines hit, the market's reacting positively or negatively to those news items. So again, it is at this point a lot of political risk that's in the markets.
On the China issue, China's responded by saying it has listed of some potential retaliation targets against the U.S. U.S. goods which had an import value into China of $3 billion in 2017 include wine, fresh fruit, dried fruit, nuts, steel pipes, modified ethanol, and ginseng. Also, U.S. pork and recycled aluminum goods and soybeans. China says it'll put a 15% duty on those first group and a 25% tariff on that second group. U.S. pork, that's a big one.
It is. And you saw it in pork prices over the last couple of days. Pork prices have come down dramatically in the last couple of days in response to that. And that's what we're starting to see is investors and manufacturers, producers, et cetera, trying to figure out what the rules of the game are. The playing field has changed, and so we're not sure what those impacts are going to be. The common thought is it's going to be negative, so the markets are reacting very negatively to it, and we're getting that sell-off. We think it's going to continue for some time yet.
Is a trade war something that we want? I'm wondering. I guess I'm scratching my head about what the advice is that the White House is getting on this. Why they're moving down this road?
Well, you know, if you listen to Trump talk about the tariffs yesterday, his example and why they're going down this road. The example that he used is if China exports a car to the United States and we bring it into the United States, it's a 2% tariff or a 5% tariff. If we try to sell our car into China, it's a 25% tariff. So his thought is, if we can equalize those numbers, whether they're both at 25 or they're both at 10, that's the goal. The goal is to equalize those tariff numbers. And that's really what Trump is after. So you heard a lot of what he's trying to do in yesterday's discussion when he brought up the new tariffs on China.
Paul, hang on. We're going to continue our conversation with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, investors could continue the sell-off today following yesterday's stock plunge, the Dow dropping 724 points, driven by concerns of possible trade wars following the president's announcement of $60 billion worth of tariffs against China. Today, leaders in China responding in a more measured way, proposing $3 billion in retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. Experts say that could mean higher prices for consumers on everything from smartphones to washing machines. Citigroup is now the first big bank to put restrictions on how guns are sold. It's telling business customers that sell guns. Buyers have to be at least 21 and need to pass a background check. Citigroup also banning its customers from selling bump stocks. The latest push to keep Toys R Us in the game. The executive of the toy maker Bratz Dolls says he's interested putting up money of his own and launching a crowdfunding campaign that would raise money to back hundreds of Toys R Us stores. Liquidation for Toys R Us is expected to begin today. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. As we continue to watch Wall Street this morning, futures improving a little bit, but still off more than 150 points. An implied open down triple digits this morning. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We're having a regular Friday discussion with Paul. And Paul, I mentioned some of those local stocks, Boeing, Caterpillar, Deere. If those are in our portfolio, what do we do as we see all of this happening? Is it still the same advice? Just sit calmly?
What we've done with, because we've had Boeing in the portfolio, you got to remember Boeing was double last year. It went up twofold. And it started out the year on a house of fire as well. It was up over 20%. And so we did take profits out of Boeing. We still have some in the portfolio. We've shied away from Deere and Caterpillar. By our measures, they were on the expensive side. Again, the expectation that they were going to be doing extremely well in the international markets. And valuations got kind of stretched for some of those companies. where we're finding value still in the in the U.S. is still around technology, but not necessarily the FANG stocks. We do like a lot of the more mid-tier technology names, and some of the healthcare names have kind of come in here as well that look to be reasonably priced. So again, as we talked about the last couple of weeks, have your shopping list, have your price points, and look to do a little bit of nibbling in the market here.
You mentioned the FANG stocks, and the F in the FANG is Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They had a rough week. Is that something that you see improving? Or are they in trouble?
It's hard to say because there's certainly a lot more understanding with the events of the revelations of this last week of what happens to all of your stuff on Facebook, your information, your personal profile, et cetera, and where that winds up going. And that's been kind of the social contract with Instagram, with Facebook, with Twitter, et cetera. Is that you have now the ability to go and share all of your pictures of food and cats and so on the internet with your friends and family. But in exchange for that is you give up a lot of your personal information to do that. And I think people were fine with that up until it's not fine anymore. And that's where we're at, I think. And so there is some risk there of Congress getting involved in this. But you know, we saw this with Equifax, and so far there's been nothing done to Equifax, and that's now been kind of pushed to the side. Facebook obviously doesn't have the same type of information, but a lot of very personal information.
Market cap this week lost for Facebook in the neighborhood of about $55 or $60 billion. That got Mark Zuckerberg's attention, so maybe he'll do something on his own to fix the problem.
He's been out at different times and talking about, we got to change some things, and we have to change how we do our business and everything else. But remember, too, when Facebook was first created, their mantra was move fast and break things. So that hasn't necessarily disappeared from some of the internal. Belief systems that Facebook has.
We've gone through the entire show and we haven't talked about the Federal Reserve at all yet. Remember
that? Economic stuff. Yes.
They had economic stuff going on this week.
They did. They raised their rates as was anticipated. What was interesting to me is listening to the question and answer by Jay Powell. He came off as a little bit more dovish. He confirmed, I think, for the markets that there's going to be 3 rate increases this year, where there was probably about a 33% chance that they were going to go 4. I think that might be off the table. In his own terms, he basically said the Fed is still data dependent and looking at the economic data before they make decisions on rates. But we think 3 is baked in. The risk in the market, if you look at things from where we sit today, certainly with all the trade stuff going on, the risks are not for 4 increases, but maybe 2. So we're seeing in the interest rate market, interest rates coming down, where 3 weeks ago we were concerned about interest rates going significantly higher. Now they're coming back down. We're starting to see a flattening of the yield curve again. So some of those concerns that we had 2-3 months ago are starting to come back into the marketplace.
They also signaled 3 next year as well. So if you've got credit card debt, now may be a time to start paying that off.
It is one of the best returns you're going to get at 15% to 18%, 20%. By paying off your credit cards early, by paying it on a monthly basis, you save yourself a 15 to 20% hit. It's like earning that 20% rate of return. So absolutely, that is the first place that you take extra dollars and make sure that credit card gets paid off. It's a very easy rate of return that, as a money manager, I can't touch on a regular basis.
Paul, have a great weekend. By the way, how's your bracket doing?
I think I have 1 or 2 left.
Right.
There's not much there anymore. It's a local rooting interest for the Big Ten right now, and certainly Loyola.
Right. Well, have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely.
Okay, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and his friends and colleagues over at Kingsview at kingsview.com is the website.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. New Chicago startup Carrot Health has created a platform for employers that pays their employees to work out. Carrot's platform tracks employee fitness metrics through wearable devices like Apple Watch or Fitbit and rewards them with cash or gift cards when goals are met. Naperville could soon be getting a new tech incubator. The city has plans in place to turn a 200,000-square-foot section of Nokia's campus in the Interstate 88 corridor into a startup incubator and tech hub, dubbed NHub 88. If approved, it's expected to open in the fall. And five Big Ten universities, including Northwestern, Indiana, Nebraska, Purdue, and Rutgers, are working on a new cybersecurity initiative. The program aims to protect the schools from cyber threats and help them identify and respond to online hacks. That's today's InnoMinute Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:41, and we are happy you're here with us on our Friday edition of the broadcast. United Airlines has had a rough go of it lately, delivering pets in cargo and in its cabin, and has made some changes in recent days and weeks. Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com and is with us this morning via Skype. Brian, what's the latest on this story?
Yeah, United has had a rough go of it with lots of things recently. The most recent problem that United has had has gone viral. You may remember earlier this month, apparently a flight attendant asked a small dog to go in the overhead bin. There was some confusion. We're not sure exactly what happened, but we do know that United admitted its mistake and that small dog died while in the overhead bin. So that was bad enough. That was horrible press for United. And then not long after, United admitted that it had another dog that was actually shipped as cargo, which is relatively normal. And that dog was supposed to end up in Kansas. And instead, we're not sure exactly what happened, but United sent the dog to Japan. And this was twice in 1 week. It was a disaster. And United came out and said two things. One, we're really sorry. And two, we're going to change the way that we deal with pets. So first of all, I think everybody knows pets should not be in the overhead bins. That should be taken for granted. But the second thing that United said is they are going to look at their pet safe program, and that's pets that go as cargo. They're going to basically pause it for a little bit. If you already have a reservation, I think that your pet can go, but you can't make new reservations for a while United works on its policies, procedures for shipping pets.
Part of this is they said with the pets in the cabin, they were going to start using brightly colored bag tags to identify those pets.
Yeah, you know, you would think that people would know what was a dog and what wasn't. But, you know, sometimes dogs do, smaller ones especially, people will put them in what look like carry-on bags. And I think it's possible that a flight attendant, as probably happened in this case, would just see the bag, maybe wouldn't know the dog was in the bag. And so the flight attendant would say, put your bag in the overhead bin. And maybe the dog owner wouldn't push back. So I guess if you have brightly colored tags on your bag that's in the cabin, the flight attendant will know, hey, this is a dog.
You know, part of the story is that United has had quite a few animals die on in its care. And is 18 out of 24, I think, were on United over the last, what, year or month?
Okay, so I admit, Steve, to not following this as closely as other people. But it is my understanding that there are some questions about statistics here in the sense that United has a much bigger dog as cargo business than other airlines. They call it pet safe. They actually, you know, as recently as a couple weeks ago would advertise this program that United had. And I don't know if United really, I hate to say it, but kills more animals than any other carrier. It's just that United has more dogs, more animals, and so on the whole, it looks like United is worse, but I'm not sure United is.
Yeah, so it's in other words, the other airlines don't carry more as many pets, and so that's why the data looks a little skewed.
Exactly, that's my understanding.
Brian, is it me, or does it seem like there are just more dogs flying on airlines, period? I mean, whether it's a service dog or a support animal, does it seem like there are more to you?
It's hard to tell, but I think most people in the industry do think that more animals are flying. One of the problems has been, you know, historically, people were a little bit more willing to let an airline take their dog in the cargo hold. And so dogs were on the planes, but people maybe didn't know it. In recent years, a couple things have happened. One, customers don't feel as comfortable letting an airline handle their dogs in the cargo hold. And then, of course, it costs quite a bit of money to do that. And so people are increasingly taking their dogs on in the cabin. And often they're doing it, they're essentially pretending that their animals are service animals, and so there's no charge. And that's part of the reason that we're seeing so many more animals, and dogs especially, in these passenger cabins. I know that airline executives don't really like it, but again, a lot of the times they're coded as support animals, and there's just not much airlines can do.
Let me ask you another question about another story that's out there. JetBlue, a disruptor?
Yeah, you know, I wrote a story recently that says that JetBlue is a disruptor. Just about one thing in particular, JetBlue has a new-ish, it's about 4 years old, business class cabin. It's called Mint. People in Chicago may not see it because it doesn't fly to Chicago, and frankly, it may never. But JetBlue has a small subset of planes with a true business class cabin with these really cool flatbed seats. There are 16 of them on each plane. And JetBlue started in 2014 flying them from New York to Los Angeles and San Francisco. And being the good low-cost carrier that it is, JetBlue undercut its biggest competitors on price. And so years ago, you might have paid $2,500 for a business class ticket from New York to LA, even in advance, and now you can pay as little as $1,200. And that's not now on just JetBlue, it's also JetBlue's competitors. JetBlue is expanding its Mint cabin. Again, it's very popular, and they're going to places now like Las Vegas and San Diego and Seattle, places from the East Coast that generally haven't had flatbed seats. That's exciting in and of itself for a lot of people, but most folks are looking at JetBlue's Mint cabin for another reason. It's really a perfect product to send to Europe. So we know that JetBlue only flies in the Americas right now, but they've been talking for a couple years about the possibility of flying from Boston and New York to London and other places in Western Europe. And that would be a pretty big deal because we've seen prices and products disrupted on the coast-to-coast flights, and it would be a lot of fun to see the pricing structure disrupted in the same way on transatlantic flights.
And with some of those other airlines, I know you've been writing about the business model and the money here, but when we see some of those other companies, they're doing it pretty cheaply in comparison to the big airlines, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, JetBlue has far lower costs. JetBlue doesn't have the history and the bureaucracy that a lot of airlines have. So just to give you an example, people expect when they fly in a business class cabin that they're going to be able to use an airport lounge, a United Club, an Admirals Club, things that you have at O'Hare. JetBlue said, you know what, we're starting a business class cabin from scratch. We want the fares to be low, and we want people to love it. Do we really need an airport club? And they decided that they don't. And so on American, Delta, United, people get to the New York airports, and they go to their club, and then they get on their business class flight, and they fly to LA. JetBlue, there's no club. You just get on the plane and you fly. And people don't seem to mind. They love JetBlue Mint. And so a lot of the ways that JetBlue has been able to change what it does is just by rethinking the experience. You know, what do people need? They don't serve the multi-course meal in the same way that other airlines do. Generally, you get all your food at once. But it's still a great product.
So is the grade on the Mint going to be just how many routes that this is added? Is that how we know it's going to be successful?
Well, you know, there is some question about this. JetBlue started flying this Mint product from New York to LA and San Francisco, as we said. Those are surefire routes for something like that. People have been flying a better product between these big cities on the coast for decades. So what we're looking at right now is, okay, well, if JFK LA works, does JFK Las Vegas work? You know, there isn't the type of money year-round in Las Vegas as there is in LA. LA has the entertainment industry. Of course, there are certain times of the year where people want to have the best experience possible to Las Vegas. But what about Tuesday afternoon? You know, what about Wednesday morning? Can JetBlue fill these flatbed seats and get a good fare between city pairs that haven't been able to sustain a better product in the past? So we'll be looking at that. And I know that JetBlue is also looking at, again, the economics of flying to Europe and whether it can disrupt the industry that way.
Brian, there's been a little bit of buzz in the past couple of weeks about Warren Buffett possibly buying an airline. Is this just a little bit of rumor, or is there really an idea that he might be out there looking for an airline?
It's hard to tell what Warren Buffett is thinking, but we do know that about 3 weeks ago he told CNBC that he wouldn't rule out owning an airline. This sounds sort of insane to a lot of people. The airline industry is one of those industries where the old joke works. You know, how do you make $1 million in the airline industry? You start with $1 billion. But Warren Buffett seems to see things that other people probably don't. And we know that right now he owns about $10 billion of stock in United, American, Delta, and Southwest combined. And it's certainly possible that he would go after one of the big U.S. airlines. One of the fun games right now is to try to figure out which ones he would be interested in. It's hard to know for certain, but people do think that maybe Southwest and Delta are favorites. They have pretty good cash flow, strong brands. People respect their management. It just seems to be the type of company, or both of them seem to be the type of company that Warren Buffett would be interested in. There's a lot out there that he has a $116 billion cash stockpile, which would be enough to buy an airline. So maybe this will happen, and it would probably be good for consumers. You know, he has a pretty good record of having a hands-off approach with companies, and companies led by him tend to do pretty well.
Interesting. I guess we'll stay tuned. Brian, always good talking with you.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is an airline business reporter for Skift.com. Make sure you follow Skift on Twitter, at Skift, and Brian Summers as well, at Brian Summers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, some improvement in the futures market this morning. Dow futures now off just 106 points. When we began the broadcast this morning, it was closer to 200. NASDAQ futures are down about 54. S&P futures down about 7. It's Friday, our regular Friday conversation this morning with Orion Samuelson. Orion, good morning. How are the livestock markets doing with all this mess?
Well, it's interesting you ask about livestock, because we do get an important report today. The monthly cattle on feed report will be coming out from USDA today. And the guesstimates on what they will say, basically they're expecting on average 8% more cattle on feed than a year ago, and they're expecting placements of cattle in the feedlots to be up 4% from a year ago. The area that's been challenged a little bit by the trade war possibility is pork, particularly with China, because when we do get into tariffs and that type of thing, countries involved always look at where they retaliate to make the biggest impact. China is the fifth largest importer of U.S. pork, and there's some trade war concerns, but there also has been larger than anticipated hog processing numbers, so that's impacting what turned out to be a pretty sharp sell-off in the pork market yesterday. Cattle, however, turned higher, and that's the first time in five sessions that we haven't seen cattle trade lower.
China says they may also retaliate against the U.S. With soybeans, tariff on soybeans. What would be the impact of that?
Well, if it were to be a full retaliation, the impact would be tremendous, because China is the biggest buyer of U.S. soybeans, and they continually buy big numbers. They say they're not going to, but they end up doing it because soybean meal is so critical to the livestock production in China, particularly in the pork industry again, and they need soybeans to crush them into soybean oil and soybean meal. But on the other hand, it would make an impact on soybean farmers here in the United States, because we depend a great deal on China for that marketplace. And the market right now, looking at where would China go? Well, China would go to South America. But then, interestingly enough on that, we've got a cut in production there, particularly in Argentina, because of the drought that has been going on for months. So it's an always interesting trade picture, but soybeans would hurt.
What do you have on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, on the morning show tomorrow, we're going to review some of the highlights of National Agriculture Day on Tuesday. Max Armstrong was in Washington, and he'll check in with that. And we're going to talk dairy with John Onken, who is publisher of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter in Madison, Wisconsin, and really keeps an eye on the dairy industry. And, of course, it is challenged basically by producing more milk than we're consuming. So that's what we'll talk about tomorrow morning.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us the morning show tomorrow, 5 to 6, right here on 720 WGN with Orion and Max Armstrong. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, March 23rd. Not a lot on the calendar today. Commerce Department releases its February report on durable goods. Commerce will also report on new home sales in February, and we'll continue to watch the markets as they do whatever they're going to do today. Yesterday, the Dow off by nearly 724 points, the Nasdaq off 178. Futures have been pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street, and in China and Japan, markets are lower by 4.5%, the Nikkei down 4.5%, the Shanghai Composite off about 4%, so it could be a rough day in the markets on this Friday, March the 23rd.